It is episode 12, and we have our most exciting episode to date. Tonight, we are talking to Downtown Bruno. Stick around. This is the Oversell Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Oversell Podcast. My name is Derek.
I'm Dan.
I'm Mike.
We're here to talk a little professional wrestling. Tonight, we have, I think this is our biggest episode to date. We have a guy I grew up watching every Saturday
morning. We all grew up watching.
On Saturday morning wrestling. He actually made his debut on my fifth birthday. This is how I knew this interview was supposed to happen. November 8th, 1986. My 15th birthday. We're joined by Downtown Bruno. Downtown Bruno, thank you for being on the show.
I've got nothing to say.
He's got nothing to say.
Let's wrap it up.
That concludes this episode of the Oversell Podcast.
You know, now bear in mind, that was my debut on Channel 5.
Yes, sir.
It was not my debut in the business. I broke in April 8th, 1979.
Wow.
That was my, and I had been working for the Memphis organization for a while before that, before my TV debut. But that was my actual TV debut, which is what you said on your birthday. That was your exact birthday?
November 8th, 1981 was my birthday.
Oh, 81. I thought maybe.
But I was 5 years old. And I think that's when Dad started making me watch wrestling every Saturday morning.
Oh, okay.
Was around right around when I was 5 years old.
Now, my math isn't exactly good. Does that make 40 years in the business yet, Bruno?
No, I started in 79. This is 2015. It's 36 years in the business.
Yeah, you're creeping up on it, though.
It's amazing that I'm only 29 years old.
Hey.
Well, you look
alone, 36 years in the business, so it's an act of a freak of nature.
And see, that's how good you are, that you have 10 more years than you are older in the business. So.
You know what 36 years in the business makes me?
What's that?
Old.
Yeah. 37 is how old I am. So you've almost got as many years in this business as I am old. So
it's tiresome, man. But I mean, it paid for this building we're sitting in, and pays for what I'm driving, and I got almost $1,000 in the bank, almost.
Hey, almost. Almost. And that's what matters.
Right.
But we're on the road this week. We're actually in the humble abode of Downtown Bruno, who is better known by some of you WWE fans as Harvey Whippleman, and has been in, what, three WrestleManias?
Damn, see, I'm not the one to keep up with stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm being honest with you on that. I'm not one to keep up. I'd say I know I was in.
I know you managed Sid at 8.
Sid at 8. I managed. No, I've been in four WrestleManias because I managed Sid at 8. I managed
Gonzalez
two WrestleManias back to back against Undertaker.
Okay.
And then I managed Adam Bomb against Earthquake.
Okay.
At WrestleMania 10. Wait a minute. I take it back. One of those Undertaker matches was SummerSlam.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was three. Maybe I should just shut up and let y'all talk.
But, you know, I want to be there when this happens, and I know it's eventually going to happen. But I honestly, and you, I know you may feel differently about this, but I honestly feel you deserve a spot in the Hall of Fame. We've talked about this multiple times on the podcast. Me and you being friends has no bearing on this whatsoever. Absolutely not. Because getting to know you as one of my best friends, not just in the business but personally, just the fact of how much you've done in the wrestling business alone, you know, as one of the greatest all-time managers, you know. And we had a mock, what do we call it?
The Mount Rushmore
of Mount Managers. And I had you up there with Bobby Heenan and J.J. Dillon and some of these other, Derek and Mike both had you up there too, I believe.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. You know, I mean, hey, if WWE ever sees fit to give me that accolade, I'll certainly take it with open arms, you know. But as like you said, and I feel the same way, you and me are best of friends.
Mm-hmm.
I never got in the business to get awards and trophies and whatever I got in the business to support my wife, support myself, and make a living. Mm-hmm. And anything else that comes after that is fine. And I appreciate everybody calling me a legend and this, that, and the other. That's fine, but, you know, that don't pay the bills. And I'm just fortunate enough to make a living for many years in a business that most of the time I enjoy. And
most of the time. Yeah. It has its moments.
It has its moments. Well, you know, is cussing is allowed on this podcast or no cussing?
A little bit.
No,
you can cuss.
Feel free.
You do can what cuss. You want.
We put the explicit tag on this iTunes because sometimes I get a little carried away. Right. So let it go.
All right.
Nothing major. I'm not going to start MF this and everything. Nothing like that.
Yeah.
It's like this. Gordon Solie, who I know all of y'all remember.
Yes, sir.
Gordon Solie told me one thing. The only constant in the wrestling business is change.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, I always remember that because it's true. It's constantly evolving and constantly changing. That's true. But, and my dear late friend Gordon, if he was still alive today, I would call him to the side and say, Gordon, you're right to an extent. There is one constant that never changes. And he would say, well, what is that, my friend? And I would say, egos and assholes.
Yeah.
Because that has never changed. No matter what year, era, whatever in the business. That's two things that never change. I don't have to repeat it over and over. I just say it one time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like Bill Cosby. I don't ever cuss, but he does a lot worse than cussing. Leave him out of it.
Oh, man. But I believe I've said this quote over and over again as well on multiple episodes. Is like, and the friend that I'm always talking about that I've talked about this with is Downtown Bruno.
Uh-huh.
And me and him have come to this conclusion on multiple occasions. If you're ever short of assholes, drug dealers, criminals, thieves, you know, in your life of any kind, alcoholics, whatever, get into the wrestling business and you'll have plenty in no time.
let me say this. On a small indie level, mm-hmm. of people that don't make a living at it. Yes.
Yes.
Once you get to the point of making a living, drug dealers are, you know, not around, not involved. Mm-hmm. When you get to the level of WWE, forget it. There's no drugs.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's pretty much what I meant. I didn't mean WWE, but I meant on the indie level. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. Because bear in mind, these people are not in our business.
Mm-hmm.
The people that are trying to work on weekends, but they work at the auto parts store during the week. And the people that are, you know, I'm a promoter. They run one show a month or they have a little barn or whatever. They're not in our business. They're leeches. Mm-hmm. You know, they wrestle with a T-shirt on. They were never even trained. They trained themselves in the ring. Those aren't people in our business. Yeah, the alcoholics and the drug dealers and the goofs. They wouldn't last 4 minutes in the old days back in our territories.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't last 4 minutes. They couldn't even get in the door at WWE.
Yeah.
Because this is professional wrestling.
Correct.
Or sports entertainment. And the bottom line is, it's what we do for a living. It's how we pay our bills.
Mm-hmm.
This is my life. You know, I make fun of the business sometimes and I get down on it. And I, you know.
Well, me and you see eye to eye on a lot of things, and I think we've walked out of a couple of locker rooms going, I'm going to make a new term, unprofessional wrestler.
Yeah, you ain't lying. Oh, my God. These guys that wrestle with T-shirts on and tennis shoes, and I mean, it's ridiculous.
They went to Walmart and bought gear.
Yeah.
You know?
If you call it gear, you know?
Yeah.
I've dedicated my heart and soul to this business, and, you know, I've left my whole life on the road, you know, just so I could sit here and have a nice time with y'all.
Yeah.
Be with my wife, who I love very much, all my dear friends. T-Ray Brown, who's going to join us on the show later.
Yeah, Trey's here.
Yeah, one of my best friends. Very handsome young man, too. He's got a really good face for radio.
That's right. You look good for radio there, Trey. All right. But, you know, it's funny, but like, hearing how everybody gets their start and everything. And I read your book, available at crowbarpress.com.
You're the one.
I'm the one. I'm the one that bought it. I'm the one, yeah. The one review, the one buy, yeah. But, yeah, I got my copy, and I read it and everything, and it's an awesome read. And it tells how you got your start in the wrestling business. And you basically started going to carnivals, I believe.
Yeah, by accident. Mm-hmm. I had, you know, I did get into the wrestling business because I wanted it to be a hobby. I didn't get into the wrestling business because I thought it would be fun.
Mm-hmm.
I got in the wrestling business because they were going to pay me. And that's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it to be funny or cocky or punky or nothing. It's the truth. I got into the business because they were paying me. You know, I'm a poor little bastard from Northwest Mississippi. And when I was younger, my family spent time in Western Pennsylvania and I guess it was Eastern or Northern, whatever, West Virginia, you know. Which,
mm-hmm.
And I didn't have no money here or there. These people were paying me $10 and $15 to put up the ring and take it down. And plus pay what I was going to eat.
Mm-hmm.
They taught me how to smoke cigarettes, taught me how to drink.
Hey.
You know? I mean,
very important skill.
Well, when you're 13, 14 years old, they're paying you $10, $15 a day, putting you in a hotel, feeding you. I mean, my God.
Mm-hmm.
You got the whole world. That's, I mean,
living the life.
And I said, this is what I'm going to do from here on out. And then little by little, I learned different things. Like, man, why don't you let him referee? They'd point over at me. He don't know how. Well, teach him, you know. Before you know it, I was learning how to referee. And I wanted to be a manager so bad. I didn't want to referee. I wanted to be a manager. I know when the Jim Crockett Promotions came to Kansas City when I was working there in 87, they took over, and I was managing there. And they said, well, you know, we'll hire him on, which is what later became WCW,
mm-hmm.
as a referee. I said, I don't want a referee. I want to manage. And then, you know, I had some problems with a guy that's dead now, which I'm glad named Gene Anderson, because he was just a jerk. You know, if he don't want to do what we say, we don't need him. Well, I was already working there before they got there. You know?
Right, so, right.
Anyway, I left and went to Alabama, and I kept managing. And managing is what, you know, paid my bills.
Mm-hmm.
And it was what brought me to WWE. Refereeing is what ruined my voice.
Yeah.
You know, that's the truth.
And, you know, it meant something to me when you reffed my last match, by the way. You know, it really meant a lot that you were the one that counted my shoulders down on that last pin.
But I appreciate that, and I want you to remember something, too. I refereed your first match, too.
Yes, you did. You did.
So we come full circle.
Yes, we did. 7 years later, you refereed my first match, and you refereed my last match. Yeah. So.
And I'll never forget. Hey, everybody, I want to tell you. On Dan's first match, he started bleeding profusely from his ear
mm-hmm.
in the match, and his beautiful little son, Will, was in the audience and went crazy, hysterical, crying. Where his beautiful wife, Erica, had to take him out of the auditorium because he was just hysterical watching his dad bleed.
He was about 2 years old at the time, I think. Maybe 1.5. You know, he was on the low end of 2 years there, and he did not like what he was seeing at all.
Right. Which is just like the fans when you rest. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, oh man.
And it started.
Well, when you first came into CWA and you started managing, the first guy you started managing was Big Bubba, right?
Big Bubba, Goliath, and Boy Tony Falk were my first ones I managed, correct.
And Big Bubba went on to the WWE. He was Typhoon and Tugboat.
Correct. And he was in the other place as he was well-known more than anything else.
The Shockmaster.
The one that tripped and fell and crashed on the floor. And to this day is the most notorious.
Yes.
What do you call that?
Botchamania.
Botch, yes.
Biggest Botchamania moment of all time.
Yes.
Hysterical.
The glitter stormtrooper helmet.
Yes.
Right.
And
right.
I think Ole Anderson did the voice for him behind the stage.
Yes.
And
yes,
Booker
yes.
T could barely contain his laughter in that video. And that's, if I'm having a bad day, that's one of my funny videos I have to watch.
Well, they had, I think they had Sid and they had
Flair, I think.
They had Sid, Flair,
Sting.
Sting.
Booker T.
Davey Boy Smith was even out there,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember Davey Boy Smith going, he fell on his arse.
that ended that big push.
Oh, and I think Dusty Rhodes was, God love him, was the one that tried to come up with that angle.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Great guy, Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah. A little bit more about getting further into the business. I know you started managing... Sid when he was Lord Humongous, I believe, didn't you?
Yeah, in the CWF, which mm-hmm. was Alabama.
Mm-hmm. And then you came up here with him for a little while and ran around here with him. And I don't want to spoil it for anybody. You got to buy the book because there's so many stories about that.
Right.
And it was so funny because like it was so circumstantial the way that I read the book. And then 3 weeks later, I'm in a locker room with you and him in at the DeSoto Civic Center.
Oh, right.
And we're at the Mid-South Fair, and we're out there wrestling and everything, and you guys start going over those same exact stories. And I'm like, I read the book. I know what happens. It's great. Oh, this is so funny.
Oh, well, that's cool. Yeah. And I've got of course, the radio people can't see, but we got a picture from that night up there with Chuck Poe, the referee I trained, and me and Sid. That was in that dressing room in the Soto Civic Center. Yeah.
Right there. Awesome.
Yeah.
Now, my dad used to he played golf with Psycho Sid one time, and he said the guy was so crazy that he thought the highest score in golf won.
I would not doubt that, actually. Yeah.
No comment.
No comment.
Now, Sid's my friend. We're very good friends, and I can't say anything but good things about him, you know. But
he was always good when I met him too. Yeah, he was always real friendly, you know.
And you know, he did that Raw reunion not too long ago, and he still looks.
He's cut.
Jacked.
He still looks jacked up, yeah.
Yeah, he looks great. I mean, he's a physical fitness fanatic, you know. He really is, and he's always been. So, mm-hmm. God bless him.
Funny stories. I've got to get you to tell a funny story right quick about...
Which one?
Do you remember the one you told me about Adam Bomb?
Oh, my God. We were in Heathrow Airport in London. This is when the IRA bombed Heathrow. We were getting ready to come home from a 10-day Europe tour. And the IRA bombed Heathrow. So everything was shut down. It was a madhouse. There was people everywhere. It looked ridiculous. And it was just... Nobody could get home. It was all the whole, you know, area in Europe was shut down, locked down. But me, one of my best friends in the business, my traveling partner, was Steve Lombardi, the Brooklyn Brawler, Adam Bomb, and Randy Savage decided we were going to get home. Mm-hmm. We were the only four. Nobody else. So we're running around Heathrow. We're thinking, well, if we just, you know, rent some kind of vehicle to take us down to Glasgow, Scotland, we can go home. If we go to Birmingham, England, we can go. No, it was all shut down. It was like 9/11.
Yeah.
You know, but we knew better. Me, Savage, Adam Bomb, and Lombardi. We knew better. We were going to get home. So we finally found this guy that was going to take a certain amount of money to take us to Glasgow, Scotland, which I don't know how many miles away that is now. I can't remember, but we're going to get a plane from there to somewhere and go home. Mm-hmm. So me and Savage and Lombardi were over near this guy, and Adam Bomb, Emmett Clark, was in the other side of that, you know, area. He says, well, get him so we can go. Get him. We'll go get out of here. So me, that's back when I still had a voice, I started screaming in the middle of Heathrow Airport, in the middle of all this, Bomb! Bomb!
Oh, Lordy.
So they didn't find that too funny.
I don't think anybody found that funny at the time, did they?
From now on, I called him Emmett.
Yeah.
You know, that goes back to the days of kayfabe, you know?
Right.
Man.
Right.
Crazy.
Right. Which, you know, truthfully, I still live the days of kayfabe. And, you know, I'll tell you something funny. Let's talk about something funny.
Okay.
Let me tell you know how Jay Leno used to have, what was like, my pet peeves or what eats me or something like that?
Yeah, right.
Okay, let's see. What eats me? Okay, I'm going to give you a few. See if y'all can relate to this.
Okay.
Here's one of them. People come up to me and say, hey, Bruno, I see WWE's coming to Memphis on such and such date.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I know what's coming next. Can you get us tickets? Okay, that's one caveat of, oh, God.
Yeah.
The second one is when they say, we don't mind paying.
Yeah.
Okay, now think about this. If you don't mind paying, what the hell are you asking me for?
Exactly.
Go down to the pyramid, the FedEx Forum or whatever.
The Mid-South Coliseum.
Yeah. Okay, here's another one on that. How about this? Even if it's somebody that, I get tickets from my close friends, my family, and maybe people that have done something for me. You know, like I get a tire. Oh, man, we won't charge you for that tire. Can you get us tickets? Yeah, okay, that's different, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But how about this? You get tickets for somebody. Okay, here you go. Here's your tickets. Now, my son really likes John Cena.
Oh.
Can you get him in the back to meet him? Okay. oh, wait a minute, your son's the one that likes John Cena? He's the one?
Yeah.
Okay, well, sure, we'll get him in. We'll bring him back into a business environment and just let him walk around free. Why didn't you say so?
Yeah.
All right, let's see. Let's go. Let's do a few more. Let's see. I'll be in a restaurant or Walmart or something. Somebody recognize me. Hey, Bruno, you're downtown Bruno, right? Whatever, yeah. Hey, yeah, they tried to get me to wrestle. Now, first of all, who is they?
I hate that.
And how did they try?
I've been done that way. They're like, oh, they tried to get me to wrestle one time. I thought I was going to be a wrestler. Like, no, you didn't.
Yeah. All right.
Try again.
Who tried? And how did they try? What did they do? How did they make this attempt? All right. And here's another one. I'll be, you know, once again in a restaurant or Walmart or whatever. Some guy walk up to me, 350 pounds, dragging 1 foot behind him, no teeth, you know, maybe tattoos on his forehead or whatever. I'm a wrestler. Oh, really? Who trained you? Two words. Everybody in this area knows. Don Bass.
Oh.
You could be 8 to 80, blind, crippled, or crazy. You got $50, by God, he'll put you in the ring.
Right.
Call you a wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, if more people walk up to me that don't know the difference between a wrist lock and a wrist watch,
mm-hmm.
and they say that Don Bass trained him. And I used to manage Don, and I like Don as a person, but sometimes I wonder, why in the hell did he take people that obviously have no, you know, minuscule chance of making a living in our profession or even being a weekend warrior and take their money and tell them they're going to be a wrestler? Oh, that just, it hurts me. It makes me embarrassed because I do this for a living.
There's an epidemic of that. There really is. There's an epidemic of that going on. And, you know, it's just about like, you know, I always compare it to like the Arkansas State Athletic Commission. Have you got $20? Yeah. Well, here's a wrestling license. You're now a wrestler. You're a licensed wrestler with the Arkansas State Athletic Commission. Sounds great.
Well, I'll just be damned.
You know, and that's all you got to do is hand somebody some money and you're a licensed professional wrestler in the state of Arkansas.
Now, see, that's ridiculous. You know what? A lot of this stuff really burns me up, like that right there. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, like I said, I've made my living at this for umpteen years, you mm-hmm. know, and this is how I've always made my living, period, mm-hmm. end of story. So, and I see some goof that, that's okay, T-Ray, get a beer, man. I just want to let all the radio people know that T-Ray Brown, our good friend, was getting a beer out of the icebox. He was being very quiet. Well, okay, I'm sure nobody knew. So I was letting everybody know.
That. And then the ice shifted.
But, you know, I'll tell you another thing, too. People say, yeah, I was going to wrestle. I get in there. But they said they want me to let that Jerry Lawler beat me. I said, I ain't going to do it. Mm-hmm. And Jerry Lawler got scared. That's why they wouldn't let me wrestle.
Oh, God.
I'm so sick of hearing stuff like that. I'm going to tell you something. Jerry the King Lawler had the biggest graduating class in the history of Treadwell High School. Because I've met at least 700 to 1,000 people that graduated with him. Mm-hmm. Some are 10 years younger than him. Some are 10 years older than him. They all graduated with him. And yeah. every last single one of them whipped his ass.
Yep.
I graduated, but I was fighting with him.
There you go. I mean, that burns me up, these idiots.
I fought with him on the graduation stage. And he had to pile drive me for his diploma.
I mean, what is it with these people? I owe Lawler my life. I would have without Jerry the King Lawler, I would have nothing. Nothing. Right behind my parents, my wife, and the Lord Jesus Christ, in no particular order, is Jerry the King Lawler. Because I owe him everything. And mm-hmm. I've said that on every forum I've ever been on, and I will to the day I die.
And I did like seeing you on his DVD, which I bought, which I have his autograph from, which was really cool to get.
Cool.
It's the first Jerry Lawler. I've known him. I've seen him for 30 years. Never gotten an autograph till recently, but yeah, that commentary you had on him was great because back in the day, you know, he was everywhere.
Right.
Down here. You couldn't walk 5 feet without seeing a picture of Jerry Lawler.
Yeah, they said I was all over that. I haven't seen it yet. I mean, yeah. Truthfully, I remember doing the commentary, but I was all over it.
Yeah, you were in there a little bit. I mean, I need to watch it again because I was too enamored with it.
I kept looking at the
autograph.
I need to borrow it so I can see it.
Hell, I ain't got a copy of it, you know, but, you know, what can I say? I guess I don't rate.
If you're on the DVD, I would imagine all you'd have to do is ask to get a copy of it.
I keep forgetting. Because I'm going to tell y'all, when I get home from the road, I'm going to tell you the life of a big-time wrestling person like me. I got to come home. I've got to cut my grass. I got to change the oil in my lawnmowers. I've got to see what my wife wants to argue about. I give her, you know, a certain period of time to do so. And I drink my apple juice at night, and I eat my chicken wings at night. And next day, in the wintertime, I cut wood, you know, chop wood, put my wood in my fireplaces. And, you know, that's the life of a big-time wrestling person, cutting grass and chopping wood.
Glamorous.
Yeah. People think it is. That's what's funny. People that ain't in it think it is.
I know. And, you know, it shocked so many people, even meeting them in the arena or whatever, you know. It's like, I've got a family. I go home. I mow the yard. I do the same stuff, you know, everybody else does, you know. I came to the arena and made $20 to get in the ring and wrestle.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's just, and it was so shocking to some people to see the human side of wrestling, I guess, you know, is what you'd call that. But, you know, it is what it is, you know. These guys out, and I'll tell you one thing that we have been talking about on the podcast is the schedule lately, which you guys have been running 2 and 3 pay-per-views a month almost for the last 3 or 4 months, right?
Well, not three. Never been three.
It was just two?
One time. It was just one time it was two.
Okay.
I tried that one on the network.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember which one it was, but it was out of...
The Elimination Chamber.
I mean, like I said, Elimination Chamber.
Yeah. It was
out of Corpus Christi, yeah. You know, I'm glad I had to remind you of that. You forgot.
That's right. So,
That's the only time we've done that. It's been one. Maybe sometimes it'll overlap. One will be at the very first of the month. One will be at the last of the month.
Well, there was like at least 2 months there where they had two pay-per-views for 2 months, you know, and it was like, wow, you know, and all I could think about was you, like, turning around, you know, and just going right back to work on a Saturday, you know, or having to be at an arena on Saturday, and I'm going, man, they're going to run these guys ragged.
Right, but a lot of these guys are getting paid worthwhile to, you know.
Yeah. But I'm not knocking, you know, them for doing it to you guys. They're trying to make money just like you guys are, you know. But my thoughts were with you because I knew you were traveling constantly on those 2 months.
I know. I just, what it is, I love what I do. I'm used to what I do. I know how to get to where I'm going the best way I can without, you know, with a minimum of inconvenience. Because I've learned how to do that after all these years. Because I get tired and I get hurt and I get burnt out.
Mm-hmm.
But I just get there, then I love my job when I get there. Like I said, those are the two constants. One has changed. One is egos and assholes. But as long as you know how to deal with both of them, you'll be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I do. But I'm just – my biggest problem now is just my voice, you know. And I'm serious. I don't have a voice anymore.
Yeah.
So I hope the people at home forgive me.
We got you cranked up on the microphone. Oh, yeah. I know I can hear you.
Because I haven't smoked a cigarette in 25 years. I used to be able to smoke a cigarette, put it out underneath my shoe, go out to the ring and wrestle. Back when I was in my 20s.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
There's some indie guys that do that now.
But they're going to keep doing it until they're in their 50s.
Yeah.
You know, I realized at one point, Clint Eastwood, as Dirty Harry, said one thing, and I've got it in a frame out of my building. It's a true story. A man has got to know his limitations.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, you got to grow up and learn your limitations. You know, you hear some people say, oh, you can do anything you put your mind to. No, you can't. I couldn't bench press 500 pounds at my size. I couldn't, no matter what I did. I couldn't do it, no matter what. Okay? Yeah, you got to lower your limitations. Doesn't mean, you know, don't aspire to what your dreams are or whatever, but know your limitations.
Mm-hmm.
I know what mine are. I know what they've always been.
And I never, ever considered myself wanting to be a WWE superstar because I kind of think maybe getting into wrestling, like, initially – kind of ruined that for me because I saw what it was after I got into wrestling. I'm like, holy crap, these guys, if they're lucky, they come home like a day or two a week and they see their family or their friends, or they get to actually sleep in their own bed, you know?
Right.
You know, and that's, you know, that's your deal. You're home, what, 3 days out of the week?
Pretty much,
you,
yeah.
You get to sleep in your own bed 3 days, you know, if you're lucky.
Right.
You know, and if they don't have a, you know, it wasn't my thing, you know.
Right.
And all I ever really wanted from WWE, to be the God's honest truth, was just an opinion. That was all I wanted, you know. And I got my opinion, you know. And I hope if you ever want an opinion from WWE, that you get one, you know.
Right.
But to want it is a completely separate thing. If you want that life, you want to go there and everything, and they will talk to you about it.
Yeah, and here's the whole thing, too, and I got to tell this to everyone that's listening. If you don't want to do this with all your heart and soul and everything in you, like I did and had to, then by God, don't waste our time. And I mean anybody in our business, don't waste our time. This is everything to us. Don't do this for a hobby. Don't do this because it might be cool. I mean, this is my life. Everything I got is because of this. My voice is gone because of this. My lower back is gone because of this. You know what? Not because of WWE. Any injury I ever got, ever, any pain and soreness and screwed up part of my vertebrae came long before I went to work for WWE, you know. And people that say WWE caused them to be, you know, injured or whatever, it's BS. It ain't true.
That's a personal choice. You know, mm-hmm. That is a personal choice to become a professional wrestler and to get injured on a regular basis like that.
That's
every
right.
Every time you hit the mat, you're putting your body through the same, pretty much the same condition as being in a car wreck.
You know what?
Every
you're right.
Every time
you're
you
damn
hit the
right.
Mat.
Let me say this. I don't know if you ever heard this expression. I bet you have. If you didn't want to go to Memphis, why'd you get on the bus?
Exactly.
All right. Now, same thing. If you were an accountant and somebody hit you with a chair, then you've got legitimate beef. You know, if you're mm-hmm. a school teacher and you know, one of those unruly kids attacks you with a chair or something, you got legitimate beef. If you're in this profession and somebody attacks you with a chair, you don't have any beef because you signed up for it.
Exactly.
You know, if somebody does it wrong or hits you the wrong way or whatever, you get hurt. It's not the promotion's fault to an extent. Now, if you're in one of these goofy towns with these goofs, you're an idiot for letting a goof hit you with a chair that don't know how to hit you with a chair. You know, it's...
Yeah.
But that's
a personal choice.
Yeah.
It's a personal
right.
choice. I never once let anybody hit me with a chair in 7 years of being in this business. Never once let anybody hit me in the head with a chair. You know why? I didn't trust anybody to do it.
And I guarantee
you. There wasn't
you.
A single person I met on the road. You know, if Nichols ever came to me, our buddy Kevin Nichols.
Right.
Kid Nichols or what was his name? Knuckles Madison in NXT.
Right.
Knuckles the Clown.
If he came to me straight up. Got him. There you go.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, was Downtown Verno killing a fly.
That was the end of the fly.
And making sure he didn't go into my chicken.
There you go. Right. You didn't right. get the chicken.
Yeah. Continue.
Creepy bastard. Anyway, if the only person I would honestly ever trust to hit me with a chair, and I probably would regret it afterwards, would be Knuckles Madsen, Kid Nichols, you know.
Well, but no, let me say this. If you were in a deal with Jerry King Lawler or someone like that, mm-hmm. I bet you wouldn't even think twice about it.
Somebody professional.
Right.
Somebody that knew how to swing it and knew how to, you know, take care of the person on the other end.
Right.
You know? Yeah. I would let somebody like Jerry Lawler or somebody like that definitely hit me with a chair. It wouldn't be no problem. But, you know, any scrub from Podunk, Backwoods, whatever, you know, no, sorry. You get a
right.
chair, I'm clocking your ass before you hit me with that chair.
Right. Well, you know, you've been on many things with me. I was telling them, I'm not doing that. No, let's you know, I don't, they've asked me to do goofy things. And no, I'm not doing that.
And that's one of my pet peeves. It's like, and when I've seen you on shows and stuff, and I've seen, you know, you come into locker rooms and try to give people advice, you know, and it winds up, you know, oh, well, that, no, I want to get my finisher in, or I want to do this. We need to change that around. And it's you. It's you who've been in the business for 30 years. You know,
well, I know
and
like,
you're giving people advice and they don't take it and they don't realize that as much training and everything as we go through as professional wrestlers to actually hone our craft You know, I was in Ken Wayne school for 4 years before I finally just stood up and said, look, I can't come in here anymore.
Right.
You know, I've started teaching classes, you know, and, you know, nobody's worried about me graduating and stuff like that. I had to cut it off.
Right.
You know, it's like I've been coming here 4 years, you know. I'm not going anywhere, you know. I need to, you know, just cut loose.
Branch out.
Yeah. Do other things, you know.
Well, you know what? And you did. You went to... what was Matt Rivera's promotion?
TCW.
Yes.
International TV. Yeah. And it's still in syndication.
Yeah, I mean, it was a fine promotion. You know, it really was. I have no bad things to say about it.
Very well run, very well put together production-wise and everything, HD cameras and stuff. Everything was great.
I mean, Matt was a good guy. I liked him. He respected the business, respected the people that worked for him and with him. I liked him. I have nothing bad to say about him. I consider him a personal friend. When I was inducted into the Cauliflower Alley Hall of Heroes, whatever they call it there. Yeah. I personally picked him to induct me into it, you know. And I felt bad that I was one time committed to work a event for him, and they had somebody there that was had a conflicting.
It was a TNA talent.
Yeah.
It was a TNA talent, and you can't be on a show with a TNA talent, and that's understandable.
Yeah, because that would be disrespecting the people that pay my bills.
Exactly.
So I didn't go. And so I haven't heard from Matt since, and I feel bad about that. And I hope he hears this because it was nothing personal. I respect his promotion and his drive and desire and dedication. I got to think about Bruno and Donna, who's
and
my wife.
And the repercussions that can come back on you for being on a show with a TNA person. Yeah. It can be bad.
So. Yeah, so what am I going to tell Donna? Well, I'm not with WWE no more, but I made that one shot for TCW. You know, so I hope, you know, Matt understands that. People understand I got to take care of my business.
Yeah.
I'm a business.
I mean, I understand it, you know. And, you know, like you said, I hope Matt understands it too. But, you know, it is what it is, you know.
Right.
People get their feathers ruffled or for whatever reason and just, you know.
But I digress. I was getting back to you, though. You went to work there and did a really good job.
Mm-hmm.
You've been to all the promotions around here. Power Pro and Randy Hales.
Yes.
And Dundee had it.
Part of the first family with Kevin White and Gary White.
Yeah,
and
which was very good. And then you wrestled with when Jerry King Lawler did a taping at the
flea market
building down at Winchester. And I don't remember the street, but...
that was a big one?
Yeah, it was the big
one. No, it wasn't the big one.
Oh, it wasn't the big one.
No, the big one was in Fraser.
This is a flea market that's now closed down. It was an old Kmart building off of Riverdale.
Yeah, I remember.
That was Dan's first time wrestling as a bad guy, if I remember.
Yes. And then everybody came back and gave me rave reviews, and I was a bad guy from then on.
Right. Yeah. I'll never forget
that. Oh, my God. Dan's such a great bad guy. You got to go.
Yeah.
He's such a great heel. You got to have him a heel at every show now.
That was I was really proud of you. You know, I remember because Lawler had it all booked out. It was a last-minute thing to even call me.
Yeah.
Had it all booked out that he's, we're one guy short or whatever happened. And I called Dan, and I said, Lawler, I'm giving you my seal of approval, you know, and he says, okay, if you say so. And he was very happy that, you know, what you did.
Yeah. And I ran into him on a flight when I was going up to New York to do some work for Walgreens. And he was going up to do the voiceovers because I think Raw was overseas that week.
Mm-hmm.
And he remembered me. He remembered me. He was just like, hey, you're Bruno's buddy. Yeah, okay, yeah. And, you know, we talked for a while and everything, and it was cool and everything. And he was flying first class, of course, and I was in economy, but, you know.
Well, if you're ever on a flight with me, I'll send you back a drink or something.
Oh, well. And you'll send me the bill for all the ones you drink, too, right? Yeah.
By God, I'm in first class, too. We don't pay. No.
We don't pay, yeah.
We don't pay in first class. All. I'm a 2 million miler, by God.
That's right.
Yep, I sure am.
I can't imagine your airline credits at this point.
Oh, my goodness.
That's a long story.
Yeah.
Before September 11th, there was a lot of stuff you could do with them. But talking about the original September 11th.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
But there's not a whole lot you can do with them now.
Oh,
Unless you want to take the chance on Muhammad Atta having your miles, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, those days have changed.
All right. Well, we are going to take a quick break, and we will be right back.
Oh.
Welcome back to the Oversell Podcast. Let's do some quick housekeeping before we get back to things. Be sure you're following us on Twitter. We are at Oversell Podcast. I am at Schropnuts, S-C-H-R-O-E-P-N-U-T-S.
I am at One Dangerous Dan. Stop looking at me like that.
I am at WolfMike23.
Also, be sure we have a sponsor now. That's how big time we are. We have a sponsor now at OversellPodcast.com. There's an Amazon link. You can go in there, click on the link. That'll take you to Amazon.com. And anytime you make a purchase through this link, we get a small commission back and help pay for some of the stuff on this podcast, maybe help us get some new equipment, upgrades, and stuff like that. So if you shop on Amazon.com, do it through OversellPodcast.com.
Click the link. Give us money.
Yeah. I need it. My wife wants me to get money.
And I'm this is Bruno. I'm at Walls, Mississippi, cutting grass.
That's right. He's at... In the yard cutting grass.
Yeah, he's, so and we were talking about this during the break. There's an account out there that is not Bruno's.
It's he is not Bruno.
At
he is
Harvey
not...
Whippleman. It's not really him. Do not follow it thinking you're talking to the real downtown Bruno because you are not.
Bruno is not on Twitter and he is not on Facebook. So
absolutely not. No social media for me. My social media is this right here. Sitting with some friends, drinking some apple juice and having a nice conversation.
Apple juice.
So what's this I hear about Mo Stiegel and apple juice?
Bringing you a case of apple juice?
Well, let me
tell you. What's that story?
When we were with a wrestling organization that I'd rather not name at this point, but a wrestling organization that Dan and I were with at one time, I used to do the announcing. And I would, not announcing, I'm sorry, commentating. Mm-hmm. Well, I would drink a few beers while I was commentating. I wouldn't get drunk or, you know, be slurring or embarrass the promotion. I was just drinking a few cold beers. I was doing the guy a favor. He wasn't paying me. I wasn't asking to be paid or anything. I was just helping him out, just sipping on some beer. Mm-hmm. And bear in mind, I wasn't sipping on it in bottles or cans. It was poured up in a cup. So... Mo Stiegel says to me, he was a young guy that was trained and started wrestling. He says, what are you always pouring up in those cups you're drinking? I said, oh, apple juice. I'm drinking apple juice. So he wanted to, you know, become friends with me and everything. He thought he'd do something nice for me. So next week we got to that promotion. And he says, I got something for you. I got you a whole case of apple juice. And I thought, oh, okay, he's in on the deal. And he handed me a case of dadgum Mott's apple juice.
Oh, my God. I could totally see him doing that, too.
I wish I could have seen the look on your face.
That is hilarious.
Yeah, and even the promoter said, we all know Bruno's not drinking apple juice.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Well, that,
freaking hilarious.
Question, I was jotting down a couple questions at work today, and all your times in the Memphis wrestling territory, who was the best working heel down here?
Phil Hickerson. No hesitation.
Wow.
Wow. A guy I always grew up that I thought I couldn't stand more than you as your character was Eddie Gilbert. Man,
he was very good. Hey, I'm not putting down Eddie Gilbert or anyone else. When I say Phil, but
Yeah.
But you know, Eddie was very good.
There were so many guys that came through this territory that were just so good at getting under people's skin, you know.
Oh yeah.
Bruno, I'm not gonna lie, Saturday mornings you got underneath my skin pretty bad too.
Well, that means I did my job well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because let me tell you something. I came from the three blocks between the six blocks, Fort Duquesne Boulevard, downtown Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Too sweet to be sour. Man of the hour.
Oh, this is
Tower
awesome.
Of power. Let me tell you right now, I am the man that walked that barbed wire fence barefooted. Been bad, been good.
This is awesome.
Dallas, Vegas, and Hollywood. Got a 38 pistol on my 45 frame. Ain't a lot of weight on my shoulders, but I got one hell of a brain. 156 pounds of walking, talking, roping, stomping. Downtown destruction, because I'm downtown born and downtown bred. And when I die, I'll be downtown dead. You know why? Because it's like Mama says, hit bees that way sometimes.
That was absolutely incredible.
Do you need a moment now?
Yeah. Dan, talk for a bit. I'm just...
Yeah, that was Promo Cutting 101 by Downtown Bruno.
Well, that, and you know, that seems to me like a kind of a lost art. You don't hear really promos like that anymore.
Well, it's different now. The business is different.
There's no managers anymore.
There's no managers. And even the guys don't talk like that no more. Now it's all laid out, is driven, or whatever. Hey, the business has evolved to what it is.
Right.
It's beyond my control. Like I said earlier, recurring theme in this show is the only thing constant in this business, besides what we said, is change. And the business has changed.
Now, but I've heard the current state of WWE. You know, they had the you know, the Hulkamania era, and they had the Attitude era, and they had all this. I've heard the current state of WWE be referred to as a reality era, almost. You know, like everything's more, they're trying to make everything a little bit more dramatic, you know, and get people actually involved in storylines and try to grab people a little bit more with some soap opera writing.
Makes
you
sense.
Know.
You know,
and it does make sense, you know. But, you know.
It's not my end of the business anymore. I'm just, you know, I'm just sitting back and doing whatever I'm asked, but that's not my end of the business anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I hit my peak when I was Harvina.
Harvina. Women's champion.
Yeah. Well, when did you get the call to go up to the WWE?
I think it was 1989.
And you came in with Sid, didn't you?
No, I came in with Bully Busnick.
Bully Busnick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was 89.
That big bowler hat.
Yeah. Yeah, and he was, when it came to being a WWE superstar, he was a hell of a cab driver because...
Damn.
Yeah. I mean, we had a match with Bret Hart one night in Lowell, Massachusetts. And we came back in the back, and Bret says, I sure hope they put you with somebody else because he ain't going nowhere. You know? And he was right. You know, I mean, he had two left feet. You know? Nice guy. But, you know, I don't know. He didn't know how to control his drinking either.
Ah.
You know, and that's just the truth, you know, at that time. I've always drank beer. I might drink one later, but...
well, that apple juice is doing you good, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't drink before I work. I don't drink while I work. Uh-huh. I don't drink at work.
Just like the rest of us. Shouldn't.
Yeah. Right. You know, and I don't operate heavy machinery. You know?
Right.
But yeah, he's just a nice guy, but it's just... I don't know. He was good for maybe what they call the indies or whatever, you know. But
now, who did you manage after Bully?
Warlord.
The okay. Warlord.
Yeah.
Man. Now that, I actually liked watching Warlord.
I liked Warlord. Terry Shapinski, good guy. I liked him.
And his career was actually ended by a broken leg, wasn't it?
I don't know.
It was like many years after you managed him, I think.
As you know me very well by now, Dan, I don't keep up with anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just going to say the truth. Yeah. I really don't. And I'm not saying it to be cocky or funny, but just, you know, when I'm home.
You're disconnected.
Yeah, I'm disconnected.
Yeah.
You know?
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's the way I am.
Yeah.
I go home and turn on the Xbox and, you know, my wife tries to get my attention.
Well, I mean, you've got a beautiful wife. It shouldn't be hard for her to get your attention, Dan.
It is not. It is not at all.
Okay. She's listening. I'm trying to help you, man.
Yeah, you're looking out for me, too. Eh?
Wow.
Okay, yeah.
Bruno makes a good wingman, I guess.
Yes, he does. He keeps me flying the straight
yes,
and narrow.
I do.
Yes, he does. As he opens up the box of wings and takes a bite. Yes. Greatest interview ever.
Yeah. So now, Warlord, you managed him at WrestleMania, right?
No.
Oh, you did not? Okay.
No.
I get confused.
No. Never managed him on a pay-per-view.
Oh, wow.
The first person I managed at pay-per-view was, Bully Busnick at Royal Rumble 90, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I walked to the ring with Busnick, Flair. I could be wrong, so if all the internet people start going nuts, just calm down because it doesn't matter.
Yeah, IWC is peeing in their pants right now.
It was Busnick, Flair, I think it was Rick Martel, and the Mountie, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
And it was Royal Rumble, I think it was 1990. So I know this is going to come to a real shock to some people, but I don't remember for sure. And then the next year was... WrestleMania, when I managed Sid against Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
The next year after that, it was WrestleMania. It was Gonzalez against Undertaker.
Oh.
And that was when you got injured when Gonzalez actually
threw no, that was SummerSlam. That was SummerSlam 94.
Oh, okay. So that was the
there must have been another WrestleMania between them, but I'll be damned if I remember.
Well, when you first came up, you were Dr. Harvey Whippleman. Right. After a match, you would take your stethoscope and come check the wrestler out.
Dr. Harvey Whippleman, Dr. BS, MS, PhD. You know what that means? Everybody knows what BS means. MS means more or same, and PhD means piled higher and deeper.
I'm using that from now on.
You know, Dan, your biggest problem is all these years I've known you, you've got delusions of adequacy.
That's right. And they take over my life.
All right, so, Mike, you ask. I'll ask him.
We have to know how Hervina came about.
Well, I had told a guy named Tommy that was one of the top creative people in WWE. He's not there no more, but he used to be with Conan O'Brien and all that. I told him how me and Stacy Carter, the Cat, had so many good matches in Memphis.
Yeah.
So I said, hey, if you want to do a deal, me and Stacy could have a good match. We have many good matches. So they took that concept and decided to completely obliterate it and put us in a kiddie pool filled with real snow. We were in Pittsburgh.
Oh my God, in the middle of winter.
It was real snow. That wasn't, you know, what people thought, you know, mashed potato flakes or whatever. No, that was real snow.
Wow.
And they took that and said, okay, Bruno, you're going to wear a, you know, an outfit like a snow bunny and put a wig on, and you're going to wrestle around in the snow. Okay, go for it. And I'm not going to say names. I don't want to get in trouble. But one of the main guys in the entire WWE said, it's probably the worst match in the history of our company. And I says, well, I don't know if I should, you know, apologize or thank you. But he says, I don't know how we expected you to have a good match. Like, you know, whatever. But if we'd have been in the ring, just had a regular ring match, like we had all over Memphis, it would have been a good match. But so this, let's take a good concept and completely destroy it. Go for it, Bruno.
Yeah.
You can do it. Here's a bunch of chicken shit. Go out there and make chicken salad.
Yeah.
But I said, okay. So there you go.
The only man to win the WWE Women's title, Hervina, and then
Hervina.
You lost it the next night on Raw, I think, didn't you?
To Jacqueline.
In
Detroit. Yeah.
And Miss Texas. That's how I always
remember. No, on SmackDown, I'm sorry. In Detroit, yeah. Well, it's a long story. And, you know, I'm not one to really go into the inner workings of the business.
Right.
It had to do with Jacqueline having the championship, but Jacqueline not tearing the Cat's head off. So somebody had to be the scapegoat in the middle. And basically, okay, if you can read between the lines.
Yeah.
All right. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, that's why my voice is gone. I'll take it for that. I'll blame it on that.
You took one for the team, basically.
Basically, yeah.
Okay.
That's right.
We'll just stop it right there, then.
Right.
No more explanation needed. We're good.
Well, there's another incident that I've seen on YouTube that, man, it is crazy, and I actually watched this the other day. It was Power Pro. Commentators.
No, it was USWA.
Was it USWA?
Yes.
Okay. Commentators are doing their thing, and out of nowhere, you just come running, jump over the table, and start attacking
I posted this on Facebook, by the way, and Matt Riviera said that, like, made his year.
Well, let me tell everybody something. This, I'm going to tell the whole wide world. Whether you think our business is entertainment or scripted or whatever you think it is, I'm telling you, whatever. That was 110% real.
Can we have 120?
Have all the way to 110 degree.
That looked 120% real to me. I hadn't seen you that fired up ever, and you were going after that guy.
Let me tell you what happened. We were at Channel 5. It was USWA, because when Larry Burton was put in charge of taking over USWA, I'd be getting a certain amount of money every Saturday morning for umpteen years. So we get in there that morning, and he goes, well, we're not going to pay you on Saturday mornings no more. You have to referee for free. I said, well, you know, that I don't do this for a hobby. This is how I get paid. This is what I do for a living. Well, we're changing things up around here a little bit. We're not going to have Dave Brown and Lance Russell commentate no more because Tony Friedman said he'll do it for free because he just likes to commentate. And he'll help us do other things. And he says he'll do it for nothing, so that's it. And Bill Rush. B-I-L-L-R-U-S-H.
Have you got his social security number?
If I did. Never mind. Bill Rush said he'll referee for free because he just as long as he gets to work the house shows, gets to work at the big one and all that, then he'll referee Saturday mornings for free.
Oh, crap.
And I said, well, you let him referee. And I was in charge of the rings at the time, too. I said, let him work on them rings, too. He's still working on the rings. I said, oh, I can? I'm going to have that privilege? I can still work on the ring? I said, no, thank you. He goes, well, not only that, Bill Rush is better than you.
Oh.
That was it. At that time, I'd been in the business maybe 20 years. I don't remember exactly. I just dived across that thing, that little room we were in, and I just started pounding Larry Burton. I've never done this before, except one time at the ring. I'll tell you that later. And then Mike Samples and Lawler were in the room, and they both pulled us apart. Larry Burton had me by the throat. Had him by the throat. They pulled us apart.
Mm-hmm.
You're fired, it's Larry Burton. You're fired. You're fired. Get out of here. You're fired. I said, okay, that's fine. I probably didn't say that.
Yeah. That's what you meant to say.
Right. So I said, I'm going to take care of one thing before I leave. And all the other guys were like, you know, on my side, they all hated Larry Burton.
Yeah.
I ran out on live TV and beat the shit out of him. Tony Friedman. And if you look at that, Bill Rush was one of the ones trying to break it up. He thought it was a storyline. He didn't know at the time.
Yeah.
And if you see, after I swung at him and clocked him two or three times, he started swinging back at me. Yeah. They finally pulled us apart. And I got the hell out of there.
Yeah.
Now, here's the funny thing. Now, remember, on YouTube, it's When Downtown Bruno Attacks.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
And then, bear in mind, I was in charge of the rings. So they put this goof named Tony Myers in charge of the rings after that. Mm-hmm. I mean, goof with a capital G and a capital F and ooh-ooh in the middle. So I can do the ring. I don't mind. I can do the ring real good. I'll do it. Yeah, okay. There's a lot to putting up a ring.
Yeah.
A lot to it.
Oh, yeah.
The very next Saturday, the ring fell down. He had no clue what to do. He knew how to put up, take it down. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
So they knew Steve Dahl, God bless his soul, he's dead now, was a good friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this, bear in mind, this is back in the old days when there was no cell phones. Your answering machine sat next to your phone, plugged up to it. When somebody called you, you'd hear your outgoing message. This is Bruno Lauer, blah, blah, blah. And then beep, yeah. And you could hear the person. Hey, Bruno, if you're there, pick up, or whatever. Yeah. So I'm sitting there watching the show. I watched the ring fall down.
Oh, gosh.
So they knew Steve Dahl was a good friend of mine, so they had him call me.
Oh, yeah.
So he says, hey, Bruno, Steve Dahl, hey, pick up if you're there. Yeah, we have a little situation here. It might end your suspension, and don't pick up. Don't pick up.
Don't pick up.
I don't know if you're watching or not, but we had a problem with the ring, and they don't know how to fix it. No, don't pick up. Don't pick up. I know you're there. And Bruno, give us a call when you can. Sorry, guys, Bruno must not be there. He don't answer. Click. I'm just laughing. And that night, they had a show in Ripley, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And they called me again later. Well, you know, we've reconsidered, Bruno. Would you like to come back?
Uh-huh.
And I says, what made you reconsider? I don't know. Maybe we overreacted. I'm thinking, no, the doggone ring fell down. Nobody knows how to fix it. But what happened was, When they finally had Lawler call me, which I'd do anything for Lawler. I'd walk from here to Milwaukee for Lawler. I owe him my life. So I says, all right, I'll come back. He goes, well, look, go pick up the ring and, hook it up to the truck, go rent a truck, bring it up to Ripley and put it up. You can referee and, you know, whatever. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody knew that Larry Burton was worried because nobody, you know, Steve Dahl said, I can't reach Bruno. They called Buddy Wayne, had him bring the ring to Ripley. So I drive all the way to Ripley. I got Chili Willie and White Boy Bobby, the guys that were my crew.
Yeah.
because they all quit when I was gone. They
right.
Tony Myers, he was a goof. We come pulling up about the same time Buddy Wayne, there's two of us with a ring.
Yeah.
I said, now what do we do now? You know, and Larry Burton, well, we're not paying you. I said, here we go again. I'm ready to roll my sleeves up.
Mm-hmm.
End up getting paid for the ring and the ring crew, even though they didn't have to put up the ring.
Yeah.
And, well, Bill Rush is going to referee. I still got a referee payday. And after that, for some reason, I was back refereeing on the head of the ring again.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it because we had the matches at Sheraton Casino. Now, the deal was they worked. Tony Myers would bring the ring down there. I would bring my crew later. They'd put it up. I didn't have to touch the ring anymore because he was already going to work on the ring. Well, I said, all right, y'all bring the ring down there, and I'll bring my crew later. So all them people at Sheraton knew me real good. I'd get there, they'd give me a stack of buffet coupons for me and my ring crew.
Yeah.
Tony Myers got there. They wouldn't even let him in. Let alone give him a buffet thing. This is not without Bruno, not without Bruno.
Yeah.
So that night, we're taking the ring down. Now, the Sheraton Casino, the ring was like on the third floor, the ballroom. It's where the buffet is now.
Oh, man.
Or it's the roadhouse now. But so there was a technique to get that ring. Some of it you'd put on the service elevator. Some of it was too long, like the side pieces and the ones that goes side to side, the poles.
Right.
So we have to take them up like a – I can't do this on the radio, but it's like – a staircase, if you can picture that, that curves and goes back up again.
Yeah, yeah.
So you had to, we had a certain technique. We'd slide it up and then shift it over to the right, then put it in the door. Yeah. If you could kind of visualize that.
Yeah, yeah.
So this Tony Myers idiot didn't know how to do that. So the Mississippi River Inlet was right below where we walked up the steps. He slid one of the side pieces and it slid right into the river.
Oh, God.
Thank God this was taking the ring down, not putting it up.
Yeah.
There would have been no show. So he goes, oh, my God, I'll be fired now. And bear in mind, this is a side piece of a ring.
Right.
It weighs a ton.
It went straight to the bottom.
Yeah. He goes, I'm going to dive down and bring it up. I said, you doggone moron. You can't do that. I'm going to dive down and bring it up. I'm not going to lose my job. And Chili Willie, my buddy that used to work for me, a little black kid from the projects.
Yeah, yeah.
No, man, let him go.
Let him go.
Because he hated him. He was a goof. And now, another big fat guy, good guy, Raymond, but he was lazy. Whenever we would get ready to take the ring back downstairs, Raymond always would say, let me make sure them lights are connected on that ring trailer. He'd lay down underneath the ring trailer, and for an hour, which it takes 2 seconds, he'd plug in the lights.
Right.
He would lay there. Well, what, we looked down, he was sound asleep. Dealing with this big-ass ring and everything. So I said, oh, my God, is Raymond dead? Let's go find out. Chilly Willie goes, let's go through his pockets first.
Oh, nice. Oh, God.
Well, let me ask you this, because it's kind of a connection between us. How did the program between Bud Schropel and yourself get started?
Well, one night, Bud Schropel was at this gay bar. And
Oh, Dad, if you're listening, I'm sorry I brought it up.
Just kidding. No, it was George Klein. Was a good friend of Lawler's, a good friend of mine too, but really a good friend of Lawler's. And they were publicizing, now correct me, I don't remember, what was the radio station they were all on?
WHBQ.
Okay, WHBQ.
I think.
And they were publicizing the Bud Schropel and the Rain Man
sports show.
And they would come over on Channel 5 TV and publicize it. They were interested in kind of getting involved in Memphis wrestling. So we did a thing where they brought these pictures of Elvis. And I took them and I smashed them and everything. And they wanted to, downtown Bruno, you got to replace these pictures. Then I came back with this.
I remember that. It was like a clay. It looked like a drunk dude made out of clay or something right. like that.
Yeah.
And you and put this, a, you just put an Elvis.
Yeah. I said, Elvis. This was from Elvis. They said, you know, good son. They busted over my head or something. So that's it. We're going to have a match. And then it was me and Uptown Karen against your dad and
John Rainey.
And then we did it again with me and Brandon Baxter against them at the Sheraton Casino.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fun. You know, it was interesting having a match with somebody who's never had a match before against a young girl and a lazy guy, which is me. I've always been lazy in the ring. And that's always been, but I always felt like getting the most out of the least. I've always done it. I've made a career out of it.
Right.
You know, when I work hard. Since I've been out of the ring, I work harder than I ever had in my life. and I was in the ring. Not as a referee. I was never a lazy referee. Dan will tell you that.
Oh, yeah.
As a referee, I was jumping around and everything.
And only,
except back in my young days when I was hungover, which I don't drink anymore. Any less. But, but yeah, we had a – no, but it was there was a young girl that was just dying to jump around the ring, and your dad, who was, you know, pretty athletic, mm-hmm. and John Rainey, who smoked 18 cigarettes
oh,
per
man, he would not – I think if you took a cigarette out of his mouth, another one would just pop right up there.
Yeah, he had like the Pez's pension thing. And we're trying to have a match. A lazy guy, a cigarette smoker, your dad, and Uptown Karen. So she was really the only athletic one in the ring. But you know what? It got over. It worked. And then we mm-hmm. did with Brandon, which was great because he did all the work, and I tagged in and, like, you know, flipped somebody in the ear and tagged back out again. And, you know, I didn't know what it was like to not be lazy until I started refereeing and then working behind the scenes. But I was always the laziest guy in the ring. Not when I was managing. Mm-hmm. But I was lazy in the ring. But I'm not saying that to put myself down or be self-deprecating. I'm saying because I did it for a reason. Mm-hmm. When I did something, it meant something. All this bing, bang, boom, boom, it don't mean nothing.
Right.
But when I was in the ring, I was very slow-paced. I would start off slow and taper down. But you know what? When I finally did something, it meant something. Right. I wanted what I wanted a length in my career, too. You know, I wasn't wanting to go through tables. I was wanting to sit on one.
And the most fun that the most fun that I ever had was you refereeing any of my matches. I mean, there's still a match that me and Greg King talk about.
Oh my
in
God.
Ripley, Tennessee.
That
and
was
I
my
know
favorite
you remember
match.
It. I know you remember it to this day. I was heel and Greg was face. To this day, that was the most fun match either one of us have ever had.
Make that
Greg,
three of us.
Greg still talks about that. You know,
I wish I had that on tape.
I wish
so
I did,
fun.
Too. That was so much fun.
I mean, to lay this out for the listeners, it was a thing where no matter what Dan did, Dan was the bad guy. Greg King was the good guy. Whatever Dan did, I would count real, real fast, and I'd yell at him or whatever. But if Greg did something, I would like be tying my shoe. Or I'd look, and the people were just laughing, and it was like so frustrating, you know, as far as the match went to Dan.
The funnest spot for us, for me and Greg, was if you guys can picture this, you know the Indian Deathlock,
yep.
basically where right. you know your legs are tied up and your opponent's legs are tied in there and they bridge backwards like that and everything. Well, Greg's big thing was he would dive backwards and jack your leg up, you know. So he had my legs folded up in the Indian Deathlock style and everything, and he's falling backwards and you know wrenching my legs and everything. So Bruno comes over and he looks at Greg straight up, and Greg's standing up, and he's like, "You really shouldn't do that. What are you doing?" And he pushes Greg backwards, and it jacks my leg up again. And I think they did it like two or three more times, and it just brought the house down. Everybody in the crowd just was into the match. It was so funny. And, you know, and I'm just, you know, I'm working with Greg and Bruno that night. I mean, that was just the epitome of what wrestling should be.
Yeah,
should
we
be
had a
fun
blast.
For
oh,
all
like
three
it.
Guys in the match.
Right. And for the all people in the audience, too, you know?
Yeah.
And the funnest, I'm going to tell you, the funniest thing in 36 years in the business, though, the funniest thing that ever happened to me, this is God's honest truth. We were wrestling in Ripley, Tennessee,
yeah.
of all places.
Everything goes down in Ripley.
We got to go back to Ripley. Apparently, yeah. we have good times there.
Yeah. It was the old Ripley High School. We used to have the matches. It was Lawler against the Texas Ranger, which was Jeff Gaylord in a mask. He'd come to the ring with a mask, a cowboy hat, the big, you know, long duster, you know, kind of like what Undertaker wears. And
Jeff Gaylord wearing a mask?
Yeah, he was the
I can't imagine that.
This is before the bank robbery career.
Okay,
began.
Okay, all right. I'm sorry.
But he came. He was the Texas Ranger with the mask, the big long duster, the cowboy boots, the whole bit. He was going to wrestle Lawler, and I was the referee. So, you know, I did a little, you know, cursory search. I pat Lawler down. Okay, you're okay. I patted Gaylord down. Oh, you're okay. Gaylord takes off the big duster. He's got two six-shooters and two bandoleros of bullets.
Oh, God.
And Lawler goes, "I guess finding a chain would be out of the question." I think we killed Ripley forever that night.
I think so.
Because me and Lawler, you couldn't see it on Gaylord because he had a mask, but him too, were laughing hysterically
yeah,
the
yeah,
whole
yeah.
match. And Lawler would lock up, he'd stop and just bust out laughing. I'd look at him and I would laugh. And Gaylord was laughing through the mask. after that, and Buddy Wayne came and said, "What's wrong with y'all? What's wrong with y'all?" And then I looked and I said, "Look at him." And Lawler's laughing too, so he couldn't yell at me too much.
Have you ever seen the video of, I think it's Lance Russell and it's Jerry Lawler, and they're talking to the doctor? And Lawler cannot keep a straight face throughout the whole interview because, you know, they're kind of ribbing the doctor. And at some point, Lance Russell just like, "I hear all these wrestlers get hemorrhoids," and Lawler just about loses it. Have you seen that video before?
No, I really hadn't seen
it. Okay, we'll have to get you that video because it's hilarious. Lawler really just had a good time.
Oh, whenever Lawler's one of the funnest guys in the business. I wish Lawler was here right now. You know why? Because maybe he'd go over there and get me a apple juice. Because nobody here seems to be doing it.
Beer that man, Trey. Beer that man.
You know, and I did a. I got to do. I was lucky because when Dad, I was living in Jonesboro with Dad, he was doing something with ASWF, I think, up there in Jonesboro.
ASWF, yeah.
And I got to be a special guest referee for a Handsome Jimmy match.
That must have been easy as pie.
Well, I couldn't get how crazy Handsome Jimmy was. And, like, even in the back, he's just as crazy as he was out front. But one of the funnest spots I got to do, he was wrestling, I believe the guy was Dirty Dave. I don't remember the last name, but I remember Dirty Dave.
Yeah, and, Little Dirty Dave, they called him.
Yeah. Handsome Jimmy grabs him by the nose with his index and middle finger and starts squeezing. And my job is to count 1, 2, 3. And then slap the hand right. And watching Dirty Dave. And I, most fun moment of my life was getting to referee a freaking Handsome Jimmy.
I've known Jimmy for over 30 years. Great guy.
Yeah, great guy, but still a little cuckoo.
And for those at home, he was doing his finger in his
That's why I said a little cuckoo.
We'll explain to him later that on radio they can't see what you do.
Well,
is it one of the...
still new at this.
One of the funniest things, my trainer actually mentioned to me that Handsome Jimmy actually did to him. I guess they'd been working together in towns around the area and everything. And then one night, Jimmy he grabs a headlock and everything, and the spot he called was, "All right, tackle, drop down, suck your own dick." And Ken said he dove down and got shot off and everything. He got about halfway through the spot, and he realized what he did, and he just started laughing.
You know what? I'm going to leave it at this. That explains a lot.
Yes, it does. Ooh, man. All right. Well...
Oh, yeah, I'm working on getting Handsome Jimmy on this show, so you know. We may have to Skype in Bruno, too, just to hear them go.
That'd be great.
We always got along real good. He was just so smooth in the ring. I mean, honest to God, so smooth. Speaking of smooth, since we're definitely not talking about my voice,
yeah,
maybe it's time that we introduce our other guest.
We want to transfer over to Trey here.
We have. Can I be the one to introduce him?
Absolutely.
Then you can. Okay.
By all means,
ladies and gentlemen. I'll let Dan Matthews explain exactly Trey's credentials and so forth, but I would like to introduce a dear friend of mine and Dan's and a well-respected member of the Mid-South wrestling community, none other than T. Ray Brown.
T. Ray Brown.
Well, thanks for that introduction, Bruno. It means a lot.
Welcome to the Oversell Podcast.
Let's get you organized there.
Switch them out here, man. We're starting to sound like a real professional.
I know.
Podcast. We're switching out
guests
here.
Upon guests and
this
everything.
Is great.
This
thank
awesome.
You for having me. I appreciate it. It's
now,
definitely an honor to be here.
For those of you that don't know, T-Ray, he is a former cameraman for the promotion we had in West Memphis, NEW. He has been on, he's actually been a cameraman for many shows, actually.
Many shows.
Many, many shows. Mm-hmm. You know, I've... Countless shows, actually. And, you know, you've actually, we laughed a little bit earlier about you refereeing.
Right.
And one time.
Yeah. In Ripley, Tennessee.
In Ripley, Tennessee, where everything
Man,
happens.
Ripley, Tennessee must be like the mecca for wrestling.
The wrestling
there's league, there's like an undefined center of the universe hole, and it's apparently in Ripley, Tennessee, for the professional wrestling business. But yeah, but now Trey, me and Trey been running up and down the roads together a while, and Trey, what do you think? I'll get your opinion on the state of WWE currently. How about that?
Well, my opinion of WWE now, I very seldom watch it now, but it's definitely changed.
Do you have the network?
I do not.
You do not have the network. Have the okay. Network. Well, I have the network and I don't have cable, so I'm a half and half with you. You know?
Okay.
We'll fill
in
all the holes.
Like we all, you know, I usually get my raw from like clips on Facebook and stuff. So.
Right.
You know, my Raw and SmackDown is Facebook driven, pretty much. But no, do you feel like maybe WWE has lost some steam, maybe in the last few years, or they're picking up some steam and maybe like a resurgence, maybe?
I think it has lost a lot of steam.
Okay.
I think, in my personal humble opinion, which I have a lot of opinions to have, but
yeah.
I think since the closure of WCW and the having no competition or having nobody to compete to make you better, I think the business has definitely gone in a decline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With no competition, it does. And, you know,
That's one thing I'm looking forward to with Global Force. I think if Jeff Jarrett pulls his cards right, down the road, especially working TNA, maybe it could move a little, give the WWE a little bit more competition. And you have Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
They're starting to
yeah.
make some waves.
Yeah.
And Lucha
yeah,
Underground.
And they're on television now. I mean, you have to have, you can have the network and all, anything on the internet, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But the best avenue to have is actually television. You have to have television to get your product out there.
What I think they actually need, these other promotions, as far as a shot in the arm, it would be monetary-wise. They really need good money backers.
Ring of Honor definitely does.
Yes. They really need
good
money
backers. They have the talent. They just put a little more money in production.
And you see, that's the exact opposite with TNA, you know?
they just need to stop copying the WWE.
They need to get their own storylines. They need to do better creatively. They have the production in place. They have the production in place, but they need the talent of Ring of Honor.
Well, they lost their identity, I think. Once they left the six-sided ring, there was a niche.
Yeah.
The six-sided ring and the X Division.
I love the six-sided ring, actually. I thought that was a very...
It was different.
I think it was when they let Jeff Jarrett go.
Yeah, that too.
When Hogan came in, that's when he got rid of the six-sided ring.
Yeah.
He wanted it to be more professional-like. Like he knew and old school and four-sided.
But then once he left,
they're back to the six-sided ring now.
Well, I think GFW actually has a six-sided ring, don't they?
Well, TNA still does now. They brought it back.
They brought it back?
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Hey.
And it may have just been like from this year when they just went to Destination America. But, I mean, they've had it since, at least this year.
You know, that's rough to find them sometimes. I mean, it's...
The easiest way to find it, look for the damn channel. Because that's how it shows on the on your TV guide. It just, damn.
Yeah, damn. What's the prefix for it? Damn. No, what's the prefix for it? Damn.
T-Rate, are you still...
Is Ron Simmons in here or something?
Yeah. Are you still... Do you still work with any wrestling companies around, or
from time to time, I may get a phone call that somebody wants me to come work for them, and I do on occasion. Dan, I was talking earlier. I hadn't seen Dan probably in over a year, maybe 2 years,
maybe two or three.
Yeah. It's been a while. So
because I know I haven't stepped in a ring in about two and a half. So
it's probably been that long.
Yeah, probably.
But I enjoy working with the talent here locally, and
you've been up to Ripley, Tennessee a lot of times, I know. And
yeah.
have you been doing camera work or anything like that for any of the shows in Mississippi lately or anything? Or
the last show I did was here locally in Memphis at the beginning of the year. I did a little camera work for them.
Okay,
which
show was that?
It was RSWF.
RSWF. Okay,
right. They film over there.
On Saturday nights.
Saturday nights, and that's around the Perkins area?
That is correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We try to promote all the local shows and, give everybody a chance to go see something,
Yeah.
You know,
like go see NWA Mid-South Wrestling this Saturday night,
exactly.
As always.
Can I interrupt everybody for 1 second?
Go ahead.
Jim Ross just texted me and asked me, was I on Twitter?
Yeah. The fake Harvey Whipple.
You know what? See if he wants to call in and discuss it. We can get him on the show.
Well, I'm sure he's not ready to call in or nothing, but I'm letting everyone know, and I'm just texting my good friend. Well, he is my good friend.
That's great.
That I am not on any social media.
Yeah, well,
we need to tag Jim Ross in this broadcast.
Yeah, hey, and tell Jim Ross we all said hello if that means anything.
It don't mean nothing that I said hello.
Yeah.
Man.
Let's continue.
RSWF, MEW, all the local promotion.
Right, I got a chance to work with Matt Rivera.
You did?
Nice,
yes.
Nice.
Which Matt's a great guy.
Was that the Memphis show that I was on too?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, thanks to you because you gave me the call.
Yes, I did. Yeah. I remember that now. I did because he was looking for a cameraman, and right. I was like, "I've got a guy. I know a guy."
And I always knew you had a guy, Dan.
Hey, yeah. We can get married now. It's legal.
We won't even get into that debate.
Hey, no. Yeah. Yeah.
I think I'm going to head out to see Marvel Elite next week, next Friday night.
Going to try and pay them a visit?
Yep. See our old buddy, friend of the program, Alan Steele.
Alan Steele.
Have you ever worked with Alan?
Numerous times.
Alan just had a birthday. He turned 39.
Oh, man, wow. He's old.
I didn't realize he was that old. I thought I was older than he was.
Yeah. Alan is great. We actually had him on the podcast a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
Super great interview. Yeah. Really nice guy. And
definitely plan to have him on again.
Yeah. Oh, if he comes back.
And Alan's definitely one of the. He's definitely one of the top talents here in the area. No
yes.
doubt.
Well, I mean, he's wrestled for damn near every Memphis promotion that there was, including the TV ones. You know, the only one he really missed out on was USWA, and he missed out on that by a couple of years.
Yeah.
And
they had Power Pro and all them ones. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, well. T-Ray, I think we've come to the end of the show.
The storyline of my life, I always...
You were the closer. That's good.
You're the closer. We brought in the all-star pitcher, and now you're the closer. You're in the back half of the ninth inning there, so...
He made the save.
He made the save. He saved the show.
I made the save, and I closed the town.
Now, are you on any social media?
I am not.
No, you're not on any social media? No,
man,
no Facebook, no Twitter?
You
no.
off the grid, guys, man. I don't... Yeah.
Does Mississippi not have internet or something?
I think they probably still have AOL.
Exactly. I'm waiting for the dial-up now.
Yeah. Those dial-ups on Twitter, you know. My phone has dial-up, yeah.
I got my MySpace page.
Yeah.
He's just kidding. That's fake, too.
I got to tell this story about Bruno.
Go ahead.
It's
got to
do it.
It's
go
actually
it,
it's actually non-wrestling related.
All righty.
And I won't say any names, but it's probably the funniest thing. One of the funniest things I've ever seen because it's hilarious to me.
Oh, yeah.
We were at a Christmas party over someone's house, which we all know.
Okay.
And the family was there.
Uh-huh.
And before the before the event, it was some arguing going on amongst family. And so Bruno had talked to both sides of the argument, and, you know, I don't know the particulars, but anyway, we get to the Christmas party, and Bruno, with the horns out,
mm-hmm.
walks over to one of the arguing people and says, "Hey, you know, I was kind of nervous about coming over here because I think some stuff going to happen." He's like, "Oh, Bruno, don't start that tonight. We're not going to have that. Don't start it. Don't even bring it up."
Yeah.
Bruno said, "Okay, no problem." 30 seconds later,
oh, God.
He walks up to the other guy. "Hey, I was kind of afraid to come over here tonight. It's going to be some arguing." And everybody was like, "What are you talking about?" And so
Lordy.
So it was about to actually go down, like the argument, and he goes out the back of the room like, "Well, you know, they're about to start," and Bruno starts and then leaves.
Oh, my God.
I thought it was hilarious.
Oh, yeah. That's why I'm friends with this man.
Well, give me some more stories. We got time.
You got
you T-Ray.
Sorry. Okay. Another story about
tell me. Us about refereeing in Ripley, Tennessee.
Ah,
and what an experience
that
was.
What an experience. I was actually there spectating. I wasn't even on the card. I was just there, just, you know, to support the show. Mm-hmm. And so happened the referee, Richard, was late. And Brian Christopher, I think everybody probably knows who Brian is.
Yeah.
He calls me out of the crowd.
Wait, who? I'm just kidding. Yeah. I'm just kidding.
Calls me out of the crowd. I said, hey, we need the referee till Richard gets here. I mean, you know, I said, well, Richard's probably 10 minutes out. No problem. You know, I'll wait. I'm stalling for time. I really don't want to go out there, but I will, you know. So he goes over the match with me, and I go through the match, and I do what I was supposed to do. And later on that night, you know, Randy Hale, well, thank you for coming up. I appreciate you working with me, blah, blah. So a week later, Bruno calls me, and I'm at home. And he said, well, yeah, Brandon Hales called me and said that they closed the show down in Ripley. And I'm like, okay, well, stop playing. You know, I was just there last week, so stop playing, you know. He said, no, I'm serious. Because of you, they closed the show down. I'm like, are you serious? He said, yeah, man, I'm serious. I'm like, man, stop playing. You know, this cannot happen. Oh, I said, no, I'm serious. So after the third time, like, Bruno's really serious. The owner didn't like the way the match ended. I refereed, and I was inexperienced.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what I was doing, so they shut the show down.
That's been the main problem with that owner for years. Yeah. But, you know, that's what happens when inexperienced guys own buildings and put on wrestling shows and think they can have something to do with it.
That is correct. But as long as he's been around the bins and put on shows, then he should know.
Yeah, you would think he would know something about it, but right. Just about if you're listening locally and you've wrestled in Ripley, Tennessee, you know which building I'm talking about and you know which owner I'm talking about, because just about everybody who's ever ran Ripley, Tennessee knows this guy. And I gotta say, I've worked for 7 promoters alone in that building in a span of 3 years.
Well, this.
That's true.
I mean, this sounds like, seriously, was this the Mecca of wrestling? Is this just the center of every...
Ripley, Tennessee, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, geez.
If there was something dramatic right. that was going to happen in the wrestling business, I bet it would happen in Ripley, Tennessee on a Saturday night.
True. What goes on in Ripley stays in Ripley.
Now, Trey, when Hogan slammed Andre the Giant, was that not in Ripley, Tennessee?
Yeah, it was simulcast.
It was a little bit further out. Actually, it was before you get there. It was in Covington.
I got to tell this funny story about Dan.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yes. Oh, that, Lord. Please that's do. What we want. Please do.
Dan and I were going to, I want to say Truman or, no, it wasn't Tuckman. It had to be Truman, Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember this or not. But we were.
I'm sure I will in a second.
We were driving. We were driving in Dan's truck. We had a Tahoe who was going to Truman. And we were just talking, laughing about, you know, the show and what we're going to do. And all of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, I see this hawk.
Oh, my God. I remember now.
Comes from nowhere and just flies right into Dan's truck. And
I mean, there was no cars around or nothing.
Nothing.
And this hawk just picks my Yukon to drive out in front of, you know, and just fly right out in front of there. And
I think it hit your light.
And it hit one of the front headlight, like, supports or something, and it cracked it. It broke it. But you couldn't tell by looking at it. But the funniest thing was to look in the rearview mirror and see a hawk doing pretty much like a 360 spin into the ditch. And I was like, man, I killed a hawk. It's like, you know, it's so funny. It was like, you know, life experiences like that. I mean, like, you can't make shit right. like that up.
It was like you were watching in slow motion. It was
I
like,
know.
It's are like, you serious? Are
is
you
that hawk going to come out here and wham? He did.
Well, that, you know, that I have a wrestling story like that. Bruno, did you never know Sexy Sam Dollar?
I met him. I didn't okay. really know him.
Okay. Well, me and Dad, we had a match against him and Austin Lane. And this was at the Big Fourth and the Fourth show. And for some reason, and I wish he wouldn't have worn them, but he wore these really thick cowboy boots, laying on the mat, and I'm looking up. The man kicks me in the forehead and leaves a print of his foot, and I had a print in my foot for two weeks, and I turn over, and I was like, man, I got to turn over, because hopefully he's not going to kick me in the back of the head. And then, sure enough, square in the back of the head, the hardest damn kick I think I've ever felt in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan told me from now on, always look for what you have coming at you.
Yep. Always.
Yeah. But, you know, I was just a little guy helping out his dad for, you know, I don't know why, I don't get why they had me brought in, but I was going to do it, sure. But Austin Lane treated me very professionally. And
oh, he's a great guy.
Yeah.
Austin is a great guy. I think that he may have, I'm trying to think of the word, been premature in deciding he didn't want to be in the ring anymore.
In the retirement decision, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder.
But, you know, he fell in, and I don't even think he meant to, he fell into that classification where, oh, I'm going to retire, and then 6-8 months later, I'm back in the wrestling business, you know? And I don't know what the reasoning behind it is, but I do plan on questioning him when we do have on the show.
Yep,
right.
Working
you know,
on that.
I'd like to hear his side of the story, and I don't want to prejudge anybody, you know, off of, you know, just what I've seen, you know. But, you know, it's bottom line, it was his choice to get back in the ring. You know, if he wants to do it, it's up to him.
A lot of people sacrifice, including myself.
A lot of people
time
did sacrifice.
And trouble.
And money.
And money.
Yes.
Betty Butler.
Yes.
To make it a special event.
Yes. And you know, I plan on asking him that when we have him on the show. And I will give him a heads up on it to prepare an answer to.
Yeah. Well, and I wonder if Nikki still being in it had something to do with it as well.
From my understanding, Nikki's from a wrestling family anyway.
Okay.
So, I mean, you know, I don't ever think Nikki had planned on leaving the ring. I honestly think, too, that he wanted to create something else. Because I know he created UWW. It was one of those custom women's matches companies.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. I think he created that too, and I think he was going to try to concentrate on something like that. But I'm not sure. I haven't heard anything out of them in a while as far as UWW goes, but you know, I don't know if they're planning on still doing it or if it fell through or what the deal is with that. But we do plan on having him on the show, and I've got plenty of questions for him on
that. Remember this. I consider him a dear friend. If he came over here tonight and said, can I stay at your house for a month? I would say, absolutely. Here's a key. That's how, you know, much I like him
mm-hmm.
as a person,
yeah.
and as a friend. But I'm baffled about that. When I made my decision to get out of the ring, I got the hell out.
And when I made my decision, I got the hell out, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I made my decision based off of how my knee is, you know. And it was either you can keep wrestling or you're not going to be able to walk like a normal human being
right.
in a few years, and if you keep wrestling, you know.
I know what you mean. I made my decision on I sucked worse than I did in my prime.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to get any better.
I wasn't going to say that about myself, but.
I mean, if you look at some of my matches back in my so-called prime, if I ever had one, I would have had to improve dramatically to be the shits. But I knew how to get over. I knew how to, like I said probably 2 hours ago, like Dirty Harry said, a man has got to know his limitations.
Mm-hmm.
I knew what I could do. But I knew my career was over. I'm going to let T. Ray Brown tell you this story. When I knew my career was definitely over in the ring, is when he attacked me and tried to break my leg on a Friday night when we came back from NEW one night.
Really?
You can ask him right in front of my home where you're sitting now.
Uh-oh.
You can ask him what happened. He attacked me and left me for lame.
Oh, really?
All right,
really?
T-Ray, let's hear the I got to hear this rebuttal.
Oh, yeah.
I plead the fifth.
Don't leave it at that.
Oh, no criminal activity was committed on the property.
Man, hey, no one important really.
No charges pending. Let's hear the story.
Well, we were leaving a show,
uh-huh.
and I was using some camera equipment because I do a little photography on the side. And we get to the house, and he's having me take some lights out of the truck.
Mm-hmm.
And I think before they pave the street out here, it's like this big dip, probably about, I don't know, about 8 inches deep, I guess.
Yeah.
And they had just paved it. And so as he was trying to take a step to the yard, I guess he forgot his own yard. They had paved
it.
He
just done it that day.
That day? Okay. And so he took a step, and he just twisted his ankle. And he almost almost killed himself.
Oh, God.
And he's always blamed me for that, you know.
Yeah.
See, he has a tray leg.
I think you jumped him and left him for dead.
So I guess I'm the only person that he wrestled. You've been in the business, what, 36 years? Yeah. And I'm the only person that injured him, so hey, I take credit for that.
Don't lie. You put his ankle in the chair, and then you stepped on it, didn't you?
Now, let me tell you what really happened. We get out of the car. I was reading from the Bible.
Yes, of course. As you always do when you come back from wrestling shows.
Yes. Well, wait. Were you reading from the Bible and drinking apple juice?
Oh, no. I was drinking holy water. And Trey jumps out of the car, says, "I hate white people."
No. Oh, no.
And he hit me with a baseball bat.
Oh, right in the knee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as I laid there, he said, "That's what you get for trusting me." That's all I remember to this day.
Yeah. Did he read you be find you?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And then he wrote.
Nobody will ever believe you.
The truth is, they had just paved my street. That's a true story. Uh-huh. Now, they raised up the pavement probably about, 6 to 8 inches. They didn't put. When you leave, you can see where I'm talking about.
Yeah.
They put gravel, and they built it up next to the pavement from everybody's yard. They had just done it that day. That day. So, when you're used to your home, at that time, I was in my house for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
You're used to, you get out of your car, you step out. That was the day.
That they had done it.
They had done it, and I wasn't used to it. So he says, "Hey, would you help me carry these lights over to my car from yours?" I said, "Sure." I'm picking them up. I step out of the car. I didn't realize that it just happened that day. And I stepped down and I fell. I turned my ankle to the point where I fell over. I dropped the lights. I was hurting.
Oh, man.
Trey even told me, he goes, "You'll be hurting in the morning."
Yeah.
He was right.
Mm-hmm.
I had to drive to Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Mm.
I just taped it as tight as I could. I could barely walk. Now, to this day, I call that my tray leg.
Yeah.
When it gets real cold or I get to hurting or whatever,
yeah.
I'll tell my wife. She says, "What's wrong? Why are you walking so slow?" I'll say, "My tray leg's acting up."
My tray leg's acting up. Well, I don't have a leg named after me. So.
I'm so glad.
Yeah. Well, guys, how long have we gone so far? We've been talking for
about an hour and 40 minutes.
Hour and 40 minutes. I think we could save.
We can we save get you guys? We gotta get you guys back on another time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This has been awesome.
This has been one of the most fun episodes we've had to date.
Absolutely.
12 episodes in, we've already had the most fun we can have.
Yeah.
Good deal.
How are you going to top it next time?
Yeah.
It's all on Trey. Trey, you got
to. You're going to have to text message.
Don't let Trey help you take your equipment out to the vehicle.
We will try not to. We'll keep an eye on Trey.
Well, I want to thank you guys for having us on.
Yeah,
we really had a blast.
Yeah, we want both of you back. You guys,
and I
want
to apologize for people that turned off when Bruno was talking. But I had a lot of fun, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you guys for having you on.
It's like Mama says, hit bees that way sometimes.
That's right.
All right. Well, we always end. We're trying to these days. We always end up with superstar of the week, Mike.
Bruno.
Trey.
Hervina.
There you go.
All right, folks. Well, we're going to wrap it up for this week. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing on iTunes, Podcast Addict, Stitcher, however you are, you're listening to us, oversellpodcast.com. Be sure to go to oversellpodcast.com and click that Amazon link and start shopping. Follow us on Twitter at oversellpodcast. I am at Schropnuts, Schroepnuts.
I am at One Dangerous Dan, all spelled out,
at WolfMike23.
All right, that's it for this week. We will talk to you guys next week. Woo.